You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Thursday, August 13, 2026. Shut up and drive. Slow to start on LNG exports. Canada now has its pedal to the metal. Published by Housley Carr. LNG Canada, Canada's first large-scale LNG export terminal, didn't load its first cargo of liquefied natural gas until June 2025, more than 9 years after Sabine Pass LNG was up and running in Louisiana. But while the U.S. Gulf Coast had a big head start and is now in the midst of another wave of LNG export project development, Canada is finally firing on all cylinders, with plans to more than triple its current export capacity of 14 million tons per annum, or 1.8 BCF per day, by the early 2030s. In today's RBN blog, we'll begin an examination of several planned projects on Canada's west coast and why the U.S.'s northern neighbor is, at long last, building a lot more LNG export capacity. There are at least a few reasons why the U.S. went from 0 to 60 in 3.5, as Rihanna put it in Shut Up and Drive, in developing LNG export projects in the mid to late 2010s. For one thing, the Gulf Coast in particular had a stockpile of LNG import terminals that had been constructed just a few years earlier, when the U.S. thought it would soon need to start shipping in LNG from overseas. Those terminals, and the natural gas pipelines built to move their imported gas to market, provided a good bit of the infrastructure that would be needed for LNG export terminals. Also, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, and state regulators along the Gulf Coast were, and still are, supportive of LNG export development, and getting new pipelines built in Texas and Louisiana was, and still is, easy peasy. It was a different story in Canada, which had no LNG import terminals along the British Columbia or BC coast to repurpose for exports and next to no gas pipeline capacity from its primary gas production region, the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin, or WCSB, to potential export sites. In addition, LNG export projects needed to clear a number of Canadian and BC regulatory hurdles and were opposed by many Indigenous First Nations groups whose ancestral lands would be impacted by pipeline and/or terminal development. It took a long time, 14 years from project announcement to first cargo, but the 14 million tons per annum, 1.8 BCF per day, first phase of LNG Canada was finally commissioned 14 months ago by co-owners Shell, a 40% stake, and the project operator, Petronas, 25%, PetroChina Company Limited, 15%, Mitsubishi Corporation, 15%, and Korea Gas Corporation, KOGAS, 5%. And it took almost 12 years for TC Energy, a 35% stake, and its financial partners, KKR and AIMCO, 32.5% each, to complete the 2.1 BCF per day first phase of their Coastal GasLink system, a 416-mile pipeline that runs from the gas-rich Montney Formation in northeastern BC to the LNG Canada site in Kitimat. But things have been changing up north. For one thing, the Canadian government, led by Prime Minister Mark Carney since March 2025, is now hell-bent on energy trade diversification, that is, moving beyond what had been the country's near-total dependence on U.S. buyers. Last year's Bill C-5, the One Canadian Economy Act, states that federal government reviews of large-scale projects determined to be in Canada's national interest will be completed within 2 years. This will include working with provinces and territories to eliminate project assessment duplication and build a more efficient and timely system, the government said in explaining the measure. Also, First Nations have taken equity positions in most of the new projects now underway in BC, in one case, a majority stake, thereby speeding their regulatory approvals and minimizing the legal challenges that dogged many earlier projects. Further, the international LNG trade has continued to evolve in recent years. Now, destination optionality and location swaps, aka geographic displacement or time/location arbitrage, can enable, say, a Canadian LNG producer with a long-term contract to deliver gas to a customer in Europe to execute an agreement with an LNG portfolio trader, under which the Canadian-sourced LNG is shipped to Asia, and the portfolio trader ships LNG to the European customer from a much closer export terminal. With that as background, we'll start our discussion of existing and planned Canadian LNG export projects with a look at the one that got things rolling, LNG Canada. As we said in the introduction to today's blog, the two-train 14 million tons per annum, or roughly 1.8 BCF per day, first phase of the project has been sending out cargoes since June of last year. It hasn't been all smooth sailing, however. The facility has experienced equipment and operational problems, and feed gas flows have fluctuated over the past several months, falling to an estimated 1 BCF per day in July, when only 9 LNG carriers appear to have been loaded, the lowest count since December 2025. We estimate flows will rebound to an average of 1.5 BCF per day in August. Still, plans for a two-train, 14 million tons per annum plus second phase of LNG Canada are well underway, with a final investment decision, or FID, targeted for later this year and, if that happens, the start of commercial operations in 2031 to 2032. It hasn't been revealed yet if all of the companies that co-own the existing facility would participate in the development of Phase 2, but it seems likely that at least a few will. No off-taker commitments for the project's output have been announced. Instead, the co-owners of the second phase, each of them a global LNG marketer or LNG buyer, would probably be entitled to output shares matching their equity stakes. Shell would almost certainly be the operator. As evidence the project is likely to advance, the LNG Canada team and the co-owners of Coastal GasLink announced in March that they had entered into commercial agreements regarding Coastal GasLink Phase 2. That project, which would be needed to supply the second phase of LNG Canada with feed gas, would increase the pipeline's capacity to at least 4.2 BCF per day, and possibly as much as 5 BCF per day, by adding compression. Under the agreements, Coastal GasLink would remain the owner, operator and permit holder for the pipeline, but LNG Canada would serve as execution manager for construction on the pipeline expansion project. One more thing regarding LNG Canada Phase 2. In July, the LNG Canada team unveiled an equity option agreement with MNT Investments LP, a limited partnership of the economic development organizations of five First Nations neighboring LNG Canada's operations: Gitgot First Nation, Gitchala Nation, Haisla Nation, Kiela's First Nation, and Kitsum Kalem. The agreement provides MNT Investments the opportunity to invest up to $1 billion Canadian dollars, about $720 million US dollars, to acquire a majority equity ownership interest in a special purpose entity that would purchase a planned LNG storage tank to be built as part of the second phase. The asset would then be leased back to LNG Canada for the operational life of the project. You might want to take a look at Figure 2 in today's blog, which identifies the following. Number 1. The lone LNG export facility in operation in BC. LNG Canada Phase 1, in Kitimat. Number 2. Cedar LNG, a planned 3.3 million tons per annum, 0.4 BCF per day, floating LNG project now under construction, also in Kitimat. Number 3. Woodfibre LNG, a planned 2.1 million tons per annum, 0.3 BCF per day, LNG terminal now under construction near Squamish, BC. Number 4. LNG Canada Phase 2, a 14 million tons per annum, 1.8 BCF per day, add-on to Phase 1 that is closing in on a possible FID in late 2026. Number 5. KSI Lysims LNG, a proposed 12 million tons per annum, 1.6 BCF per day, floating LNG facility planned for a site near Prince Rupert, BC. The map also shows the Coastal GasLink pipeline from the Montney Formation to the LNG Canada and Cedar LNG sites in Kitimat, as well as other gas pipelines, existing and planned, that will serve the other LNG export projects in BC. We will discuss Cedar LNG, Woodfibre LNG and KSI Lysims, and their status, in more detail in an upcoming blog. Shut Up and Drive was written by Evan Rogers, Carl Sturken, Stephen Morris, Peter Hook, Bernard Sumner, and Gillian Gilbert. It appears as the fifth song on Rihanna's third studio album, Good Girl Gone Bad. The upbeat pop song uses cars and racing as a metaphor for sexual attraction. Back in the early 1960s, the Beach Boys used lyricist Roger Christian to ensure accuracy in the vernacular of the hot rod culture the band was writing about. Bruce Springsteen should have used a similar method when writing Racing in the Street, where he sings, "I got a 69 Chevy with a 396 / Fuelie heads and a Hurst on the floor. A 396 is a big block Chevy engine. Fuelie heads are for small block Chevy engines only." Rihanna sings about a 57 Cadillac with overdrive, no such thing. The featured car in the video for the song is a 1959 Cadillac, not a 1957. She sings, 0 to 60 in 3.5. In a 57 Cadillac? Probably not. Calling Roger Christian. Shut Up and Drive was released as a single in June 2007 and raced up the charts to number 1 on the Billboard Dance Club Songs chart and number 15 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart. It has been certified 3X Platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America, RIAA. Personnel on the record were Rihanna, vocals, Espen Lind, Berta Runestray, guitar, Anand Lane, keyboards, programming, Christopher Tricky Stewart, drum programming, and Mikkel Storier Eriksson, Rob Hesselden, Mikaeba Roddick, and Carl Sturken, programming, production. Girl Gone Bad was recorded in 2006-07 at Westlake Studios and Conway Studios in Los Angeles, Rock the Mic and Battery Studios in New York City, The Loft Recording in Bronxville, New York, Chicago Recording Company and Pleasure Studios in Chicago, Phase One Audio Group in Toronto, Lethal Studio in Bridgetown, Barbados, Sunwatch Studios in St. James, Barbados, Espionage Studios in Oslo, Norway, and Parr Street Studios in Liverpool, England. Produced by Carl Sturken, Evan Rogers, Neo Dematrix, J.R. Rodham, Stargate, Tricky Stewart, Shay Tamar, and Timbaland. The album was released in May 2007. It went to number 3 on the Billboard 200 Albums chart and has been certified 7X Platinum by the RIAA. 5 singles were released from the LP. Rihanna, Robin Rihanna Fenty, is a Barbadian singer, songwriter, actress and businesswoman. After signing with Def Jam Recordings, she released her debut album, Music of the Sun, in 2005. Rihanna has released 8 studio albums, a soundtrack album, 3 EPs and 53 singles and has sold over 250 million records worldwide, making her one of the best-selling music artists in history. She has appeared in 8 motion pictures and has won 13 American Music Awards, 12 Billboard Music Awards, 9 Grammy Awards and 7 MTV Video Music Awards. Rihanna has been appointed an ambassador extraordinary and plenipotentiary for Barbados. She continues to record, with Friend of Mine, a single from the Smurfs movie soundtrack, released in May 2025.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.